How can I, excuse me, when is this going to be over with? We looked at the how last week. How can I even bring an argument to God? And this morning, we're going to look at the who. And the reason we're looking at the who is look at chapter 12. Again, I don't try to just come up with some ideas of my own. I try to take the ideas out of Scripture. And if you look at Job chapter 12, verse 1, then Job answered and said, no doubt. You are the people. Literally, if we were going to translate today, say, okay, all right, I suppose, all right, you are the ones. You're the ones that wisdom is going to die with. You're the only smart ones. You're the only ones who have the answers. You are the only ones who know, is basically what Job is saying. If you turn over to chapter 13, you'll see it again. Behold, my eyes have seen all this. My ear has heard. What you know, I also know. I'm not inferior to you. But I would speak to the Almighty, and I desire to argue my case with God. When Job now has his three friends, and the discussion, shall I say, how many of you, you know, you have a little discussion with your wife, and then pretty soon it turns into a little bit more of a debate, and then you're into a full-blown argument, right? Job has come from the discussion phase more into what I would call the debate phase, the argument phase with his good friends. Right? All his friends keep saying, Job, you must have sinned. Job, you must have done something wrong. Job, God is a good God and he does good things for good people. Since bad things happened to you, you must have done something wrong. Because God is a just God. He would not do bad things to good people. That was their argument. So Job, you must have sinned someplace. You must have done something wrong. You must understand that we're all wicked. You must have done something extra wicked or you wouldn't be having this stuff happen to you. And so we looked at a couple of weeks ago, the understanding of the fact that this blows out of water the whole prosperity gospel thing. Because we do see that even Job was one who suffered affliction at the hands of Satan because of God allowing it to happen. And so we looked at that last week. And so this morning when we asked the question, who are you? The question is, who are you to think that you know it all? To think that you have all the answers? Who do you think you are that you think you're going to make me feel better by giving me all these answers that you have? And so this morning what we want to look at is when Job asked his friends, who do you think you are that you are the wise ones imparting unto me the wisdom? We're going to ask the question, who are you? In other words, when you come across somebody who is suffering, what is your role? Who are you to think that you're going to somehow provide the answers, that you're the one who's going to solve their problems, that you're the one, and I know, ladies, you probably already understand this because when you have a problem, you don't want your husband to solve it. You just want him to what? Just want him to listen to it, all right? We're going to get to that in a moment, all right? I'll bring that up again. But there's a sense in which, as we look at this, we're going to ask the question, who are you to think that you're the one who's going to give the solution? Now, all right, so as we do, we're going to look at here, all right, four ways. Number one, who are you who knows what is happening? All right? As Job looks at his men, as Job looks at his friends, he says, no doubt you are the ones. Wisdom is going to die with you. When you die, there's nobody around that's going to know what's happening. But I have understanding as well as you. I'm not inferior. Who does not know such things as these? Who doesn't know what's happening? Your great wisdom to tell me what I'm going through doesn't exactly help the problem. So we look at, first of all, Job's, when he talks to his friends. For his friends think they know what's happening. God is a good God, and so if bad things are happening, you must have something bad. That's their answer. Job goes on to say, I'm a laughingstock to my friends. I who called to God and he answered me, a just and blameless man, I'm a laughingstock. I'm the one who was just and blameless. Now I'm the laughingstock to everybody else. So who knows what's happened to me and what's been happening? He goes on and he talks about that. But then he moves on as well and he talks about the animals know. Verse 7. But ask the beasts and they will tell you. Or ask the animals, they'll teach you. The birds of the heaven and they will tell you. Or the bushes of the earth and they will teach you. And the fishes of the sea. Who among all these does not know? In his hand is the life of every living thing and the breath of all mankind. Who doesn't know that God's the one in charge of all these things? Who doesn't know that God is the one who allows things to come into our life? Who doesn't know that God is the one who is sovereign over all things? The animals know that. The animals know that they trust in God to provide for them. The birds of the air, God feeds them, Jesus says. The beasts of the field find as well their plenty from God, who richly provides unto them. So who knows what's happening to Job as he looks at this? His friends know, his animals know, and God even knows. Look at verse 13. I'm going through this quickly as well. With God are wisdom and might. He has counsel and understanding. If he tears down, none can rebuild. If he shuts a man in, no one can open. If he withholds the waters, they dry up. And if he sends them out, they overwhelm the land. Listen, folks, you need to understand that God is the one who is sovereignly in control. I've made the statement before, and I'll share it again now, that when you don't know what is happening, go back to what you do know. Go back to what you do know concerning God. Go back to what you do know concerning His goodness. Go back to what you do know concerning His love for you, His forgiveness, His grace, His mercy that He's given unto you. Go back to what you do know concerning God's direction in your life. For oftentimes when I've gone in the wrong direction, or at least I find myself going through difficult times, I look back and I have to ask myself the question, how did I get here? There are times in which I say, well, maybe I should have done it differently. And there are many times in which I would say, I don't know that I would have done it any differently. And I ended up here because this is the situation in which I find myself. And the God who is the God who is sovereignly in control is aware of the situation and aware of the difficulty. So we understand the fact that who knows what is happening? We understand the fact that God is the one who does know. Now, I also put down here, I didn't put it on your notes, but I put it in my notes, the elderly know. When you get down here as well, he goes on to say, talk about those who are, verse 11, does not the ear test words as the palate tastes food? Wisdom is with the aged, and understanding in the length of days. In other words, those people, the longer we're around, the more we should know. Now, I've come to realize that, and I've heard this said before, that I feel like I knew a lot more when I was younger than what I know now. Now, not the fact that I've forgotten a lot of things, but the fact that I thought I knew a lot more when I was younger than what I know now. How many of you who are, let's just say, over the age of 60 will join me in saying, you know what, I don't know as much now as what I thought I knew then. All right? So surely I was going to pick on you because I think you're the oldest one here. Do you know more now than what you knew then? All right, okay. So see, let's look at it this way. You not only don't think you know as much, you've forgotten half the things you did know. All right, so we look at that. But I put down here in my notes, and this is an old saying that I'm just going to remind you of because many of you have probably heard before, and that's the fact that people don't really care how much you know until they know how much you care. They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so when we look at the writings of Job, we're going to realize that in trying to figure it out, what? You don't always figure it out. You don't always know why this is happening, why this came about, what you did to cause it. As Job wrestles with his innocence in the midst of his friend's charges of guilty, Job's saying, I'm innocent. I haven't done anything wrong. They're saying, Job, you must have done something wrong. Go back and figure it out. Look again. Job, now you're not even willing to look at yourself. Now you're not even willing to admit the fact that maybe you did something wrong. And we're going to look later on as Job comes around to wanting to give his defense. But I've learned in the ministry that when you want to give a defense, most people will see you as what? Defensive. Oh, now he's becoming defensive. No, I'm not. I'm just trying to explain what I did or what I didn't do. And this is the whole argument that we're going to see in the book of Job as Job and his friends argue about what do they know. We come to find out that who are you to think you know? Because really we don't always know what God is doing and why God is allowing it to happen. So, all right, who are you to think you know what's happening? Secondly, who are you to listen to what I feel? Who are you to listen to what I feel? I applied this earlier, all right? Ladies, you understand what I'm talking about. I don't want you to give me a solution. I don't want you to answer. I don't want you to solve my problem. All I want you to do is what? Listen to me. That's all I want you to do. Listen to my case. Listen to my argument. Listen to that which I share. Right? If you want to look at it, okay, look at verse 6 of chapter 13. Hear now my argument and listen to the pleadings of my lips. Can you guys just listen to me? Now jump down to verse 17. He says it again. Keep listening to my words and let my declaration be in your ears. Job's argument back to them is, will you guys just what? Listen to me. Because they thought their job was to explain to Job what had gone wrong and why he was suffering. And Job is saying, will you at least listen to me first? So we need to understand the fact that we need to learn what it is to listen. Again, we've heard it before. God gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth so we would listen before we speak. So the argument Job makes here is, you guys aren't even listening to me. All right? So, I put down here, all right, if you're going to listen to what I feel, then listen to the truth. Job goes through here about the understanding of, will you speak deceitfully? Will you speak falsely, verse 7, and speak deceitfully for God? Will you show partiality towards him? Will you plead the case for God? You guys don't even know the truth. You're not even listening to me. For when you don't listen to understand the truth of where I am coming from, then now you speak falsely and deceitfully and partially towards him. Will you plead the case for God? Will it be well with you when he searches you out? All right, secondly, I put down here, listen to your own story. Listen to the truth. Listen to your own story. Here Job turns the table and he says, listen, if you were in my spot, would you be saying the things to me? Would you want me to say to you the things that you're saying to me? So Job turns the table on and says, listen, if you were in this problem, what would you do? So as Job turns to them, he says, listen to what you're saying. Listen to your story. If this was reversed, what would you say? Will it be well with you when he searches you out? Can you deceive him as one deceives a man? He will surely rebuke you if in secret you show partiality. Will not his majesty terrify you and the dread of him fall upon you? Your maxim in Proverbs are nothing but ashes. Your defenses are defenses of clay. Let me have silence and I will speak. Let come on me what may. Why should I take my flesh up in my teeth and put my life in my hand? Though he slay me, I will hope in him. Many of you have heard that passage before. Even though he slay me, I will still hope in him. Yet I will argue my way to his face. And so Job says, listen to your story. And then thirdly, down here, listen to my defenses. Listen to that which I'm saying. Listen to the argument that I'm giving. Hear now, verse 6, my argument, and listen to my pleading as well. Verse 15, though he slay me, I will hope in him. Yet I will argue my ways to his face. I'll tell him. And then as well, as you jump down to verse 23, how many are my iniquities, my sins? Make known my transgressions and my sin. Why do you hide your face and count me for your enemy? Why is these things? Listen, let me give you my defense. And I have had the accusation been made. I've already referred to it in the sense that once you want to give your defense, well, why did you do that? All of a sudden, everybody says, you're just becoming defensive. And so Job comes to the understanding of who's going to listen to what I feel. Listen to the truth. Listen to what you're saying to me. Listen to the my argument for what I have to say. Listen to my defense. So who are you to think you know? Who are you to listen to the other person's difficulties? To what they're going through? To what they're trying to say? And I think that that can be more reflective in being able to listen first so that you're able to respond by saying, as I'm listening to you, this is what I'm hearing you say. Now, if you can say that, then you probably have listened. But that just simply means you've listened with your head. When you really get to where you're listening with your heart, then you're able to more respond back to them as well by simply saying, I'm listening to you, and here's what I hear you feel. So listen to what Job says. Listen to what I feel. His friends aren't even listening. Thirdly, beginning now in chapter 13, we're going to transition into who cares what I go through? Okay? Who cares? Actually, I was going to joke with you. I already blew up my point, but a couple of weeks ago, after the service was over, Lynette and I were coming back. She says, well, I got two of them right, but I missed three. And I'm like, you got two of them right, you missed three. What are you talking about? And she held up her notes and she says, here's the words I thought you were going to say, but these are the words you said, okay? Now, I had that happen a long time ago when I was in Minnesota. Two things would happen. One guy would come up and say, well, here's what I thought, you know, and he had already filled in all the blanks before I even started my message, because here's what I thought you were going to say. And another person came back and says, can you tell me what point two's line was supposed to be? You know, the OCD people that got to make sure they got every line filled in. Can you make sure that you tell me that? And at that point in time, I thought, well, maybe I'll just stop giving the handouts and the notes because people were more concerned about filling in the blanks than what they were about what I'm trying to say. And so that's a downfall that can happen, right? But if I were to ask you the question, what's the question everybody wants to know when they're going through trouble? They want to know what? Why? Who cares? Is there anybody that really cares about what I'm going through? Now, Job does it here in a very negative way. I admit that. Job looks at his life and he says, who cares that I'm even alive? Who cares that I'm even going through this suffering? Who cares about what even happens to me? Nobody even really cares. And when you get into a who cares mentality, all of a sudden you start thinking that nobody cares. Now, if I come up and I say, well, hey, I'm your pastor, I care. What's your response? Who cares? Because when you go through difficult times, the mental depression that overtakes and the question that you begin to wonder is, who really cares about me? I want to show you as Job did this, okay? We pick it up in verse 13 as well. What difference does it make? Behold, my eye has seen all this, my ear has heard and understood it. What you know, I also know. I'm not inferior to you. But I would speak to the Almighty, and I desire to argue my case with God. As for you, you whitewashed with lies, worthless physicians are you all. Now, you see my point? Job has gone beyond just being a good friend, having a discussion with his friends. Job is beginning to start to have a debate with his friends and start making accusations. But, all right. Oh, that you would keep silent, and it would be your wisdom. Boy, that should be a plaque over somebody's kitchen sink, right? If you would just shut up, you'd be smart. All right? Man who is born of a woman, chapter 14, is few of days and full of trouble. He comes out like a flower and withers. He flees like a shadow and continues not. Do you open your eyes on such a one and bring me into judgment with you? Who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? There's no one. Since his days are determined and the number of his month is with you, and you have appointed his limits that he cannot pass, look away from him and leave him alone that he may enjoy life like a hired hand this day. Job turns around and he says, listen, if my days are numbered, which Psalm 139 says he has numbered our days, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. That great passage, you know, God knit me together in the womb, for He has numbered my days. Psalm 90 says, teach us, Lord, to number our days. And Job here says, if God has numbered my days and He's determined what's going to happen to me, then what difference does it make? If God's already determined what's going to happen and what's going to come and who's going to do what and why this is all going to happen, if you take God's sovereignty to the extreme position that God has already predetermined everything that's going to happen in my life, then what difference does it make what I do? And who cares? Now that's where Job is going with. If this is all there is to my life, I spring up, I live a few days, they're full of trouble and pain. Again, you can turn back to Ecclesiastes, he kind of says the same thing. Few days full of trouble. I grow up like a flower and I wither away. I'm like a shadow that passes across. Soon is no more. If this is the determination of my life and my days, then who cares? Ecclesiastes says, if this is the destiny of man, then what? Eat, drink, and be merry. Why? For tomorrow, we die. That's where Job is at in his suffering. He's come to this point in his life. He's asking the question, if this is my life, who really cares? He goes on then as well, for there is hope for a tree. If it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that shoots will not cease. How many of you have cut down? I'm trying to think of the trees that I have. A mulberry tree, I think, is across the road from us. How many of you cut it down? More than once? Right? I mean, you cut it down and it just sprouts back up again, you know? I assume it's the same thing for hedge trees or whatever, road apple trees. They seem to be everywhere. Right? You cut them down and what happens? Next year, this just sprouts up new sprouts. Job says, at least if a tree gets cut down, it has hope that it will sprout out something new again. But if man is cut down, what hope is there? So we see Job's determination. If all is determined, or if I live or die like a tree, what difference does it make? Though its roots grow old in the earth and its stump die in the soil, yet at the scent of water it will bud and put out branches like a young plant. But a man dies and is laid low. Man breathes his last, and where is he? It's gone. So Job begins asking the questions, what is my life worth? If man dies, shall he live again? All the days of my service I would wait till thy renewal should come. You would call and I would answer you. You would long for the work of your hands. For then you would number my steps. You would not keep watch over my sins and my transgressions. Who cares if everything's determined? Who cares if I live or die? And then thirdly, I put down here verse 17. Who cares if I've been good or bad? My transgression would be sealed up in a bag and you would cover over my iniquity. The son comes to honor and he does not know it. They are brought low and he perceives it not. If he feels only the pain of his own body and if he mourns only for himself, what good does it make? What difference does it make? Who cares if I have good or bad? Now again, I said at the beginning, Job walked through some deep water. When you're walking through deep water, your mind begins to think in ways that go beyond any hope. You begin wondering, what is the purpose of it all? Why do I even have to go through this? And Job finds himself in the midst of that, saying, who cares? It doesn't matter. What difference does it make? But we do know differently because we know the end of the story. And we do understand that God answers him. God does care and is concerned. We do understand and we know where God's coming from. But Job, in the midst of his difficulties, isn't able to see that. And so lastly, I'm going to come to my final point. Who speaks up when I need it? Who speaks up? This is the words of Eliphaz. Now you need to understand the fact that Eliphaz is going to argue against everything that Job's been saying. Should a wise man answer with windy knowledge? The idea here is, should a wise man, you know, and it talks about being a windbag, so to speak. Basically, that's what he's talking about. Should a wise man answer with windy knowledge, easterly winds, and fill his belly with the east wind? All you're doing is being a big windbag, Job. Should he argue in an unprofitable talk or in words with which he can do no good? You're doing away with the fear of God and hindering meditation before God. Job, what you're doing is not a good thing. For Job, all you're offering is empty words. All you're offering is vain teachings. Job, where is your wisdom in what you're saying? And so when it comes to speaking up, we want to speak up with wisdom. We want to give him the right words. We want to give him the right answer. But many times there is no words that are wise. Job goes on to talk about, Eliphaz goes on to say, what about your angry words, Job? Your own mouth condemns you and not I. Your own lips testify against you. Are you the first man who was born? Or were you brought forth before the hills? Have you listened to the counsel of God? And do you limit wisdom to yourself? What do you know that we don't know? What do you understand that's not clear to us? He goes on to talk about the fact of in his anger, in his wrath, he brings out his words. He speaks without thinking. And he speaks angry words back unto God. And when we're in the midst of our darkness and when we're in the midst of our difficulty, there are times in which we all can have angry words, can't we? The people who were around us, we can say angry things. To God himself, we can say angry things. And ultimately, at the end, we speak worthless words. As we come to the end again, we see Job bringing up the idea, or Eliphaz bringing up the idea here, the fact that you are the one who is speaking words that have no meaning. You are the one, Job, who in your distress and in your struggle are speaking words that have no value. There is no worth to them. They're worthless in that which you are saying. So there is a sense in which we ask the question, who speaks up for those who need it? And how do we speak up? Job has no answer. Eliphaz has no answer. Job simply says, I'm innocent. What can I do? We come to understand that ultimately, we said it at the beginning, when you don't know what to say, say what? Say nothing. Because here, as Job and Eliphaz wrestle with what Job is going through and why, we begin to come to find out that that which they say is simply angry, worthless words that they're battering back and forth, and they're really accomplishing nothing. Because at this point, nothing can be accomplished because there is no understanding. There is no knowledge. There is no wisdom. But no one knows. No one's listening. No one cares. And everybody is speaking of their own words. Now, again, we're in the middle of walking through the deep valley. There is no real answer. The light isn't shining yet. You have to wait and come back maybe next week or the week after that, and we'll find out what's the answer because we know how it ends. But in the end, what do we know? God is the one who's in charge of it all. And God is the one who cares and who listens and who knows in the midst of his difficulty. Amen?